Hello, everyone, and thanks for listening and watching the Italian-American Entertainment Podcast, and I'm your host, Vince Shirelli, and today we have the great singer and entertainer Michaela Musolino with us. Known for her fiery and passionate interpretations of both traditional and contemporary Sicilian folk and roots music, Michaela turns world fusion songs into timeless pieces and infuses her vocals with the emotions of life. So, welcome. How are you?
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm great.
Well, thanks for coming on, and it's a stormy day here in Rockford, Illinois, so I don't know about, you're out in New York or New Jersey?
New Jersey, and it started out nice and sunny, and now it's getting cloudy, so I don't know what's happening. We had the most beautiful day on the planet yesterday, and then I don't know.
What are you going to do? It's winter. You guys, I don't know how your winters are in New Jersey. Are they as brutal as out in Chicago?
I know you get really bitter, like bone-chilling cold for like the whole winter. We get dumps of snow. We get what they call a nor'easter, so we'll get like a great dump of snow. We get all kinds of weird cold, and then sometimes it's warm. We get like a lot of extremes. We get a lot of extremes for the winter.
Yeah, so. It was like that here last week. We had all week here. It was like in the 70s. It got up to 80 last week. It was crazy. So.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I'm all for global warming.
So how I usually start this show with everybody, since it's about Italian Americans, is we just said where you're from now, but where in Italy do you trace your Italian ancestry?
Well, as you know, my last name is Musolino, and that is a very, very common Calabrese name. So my paternal grandpa was from the Comune di Calanna in the provincia di Reggio in Calabria. And he married my paternal grandma, who was from Ribera, province of the Agrigento in Sicily. And in fact, they had to elope because her family did not want her marrying a Calabrese. And then my maternal grandparents are Sicilian as well, and they come from Palermo.
Sure. So we got similar. I know where Ribera is, like my aunt, I think her parents are from Ribera, and then, but we're from Agrigento area to Aragona. Okay. So Aragona and Favara is the two cities in Agrigento we're from. And then my grandmother's side. So my dad's mom is from Palermo. So she's a Palermitana.
Awesome. Maybe we're cousins.
Probably. I'm figuring it out. So strange story. The first time I've said it publicly on this podcast, because I just figured it out last week. But my guitarist, Frank Calvagna, and I, we've known each other. He went to school with my dad, and so we've been close like family for all these years. And then I've been doing this ancestry stuff and the DNA test and all that. And and lo and behold, all of a sudden, we're like fourth cousins, me and Frank. So it's like, yeah, it's crazy. So now it's a true family band because my uncle is the bassist and Frank is the guitarist. And so...
That's awesome.
Yeah, so it's kind of funny, but I don't think Frank really cares. But I don't know if he wants to be related to me, but that's okay. So So to start out, since you are a singer and musician performer, when did you start performing?
Oh, I actually, compared to everybody else, I started late in life. I was in my 30s when I started. I always wanted to sing, but it's weird. One of the greatest influences in my life was my dad, but he never really took it seriously because, I had my aunts all sang. Everybody used to sing in the family. And I had one aunt who sang beautifully, but she never pursued it. And then I had another aunt who actually sang. She sang beautifully, but she pursued it professionally. And then she stopped when she was really young because she got married when she was really young. She got married when she was like 20. And she just walked away from it. She would sing, but she didn't sing professionally for the rest of her life. And she just figured, now I'm married. I'm going to have a family. I put that stuff behind me. So my father always figured like, it wasn't a serious thing. Like, even though they loved entertainment and entertainers, it wasn't what we did. We weren't those people. So I didn't really pursue it until I was an adult, and it came about kind of by accident. I had gone to take some workshops to learn folk dance, and the company that was giving these workshops invited me to audition for one of their shows. And when I got the role in the show, I noticed that there were all these people that were working, and they lived in New York City, and they were professional musicians, and they supported their families and paid their mortgages. with music. And it, I was an adult and it was like a new thing for me. I said, this is a real job. This is a real profession. And I started studying, you know, and I was surrounded by all these kids, these like, you know, every time you go to an audition, you go to a workshop, you're with all these young, amazingly talented kids. And I'm like, I felt like their mother. I didn't feel like their older sister. I felt like their mother, but that I, you know, it's something I have to do. And it just was, it's been this incredible journey ever since. And I've been meeting the most wonderful people and having these great experiences. And every time I get into like a crisis, like right now I'm having a crisis because there's no work for us, you know, but all these amazing things happen. It's when I think that it's just like, can't go on anymore. And maybe I have to do something different. All of a sudden, like this new opportunity comes in and the road takes a different pathway. So that's kind of where I am right now. And it's a wild ride, but it's a lot of fun. And I would never give this up for the world. The music has just been, it's been such an amazing part of my life now that I can't believe that I didn't always do this.
Right.
Yeah. I can't believe that.
Well, that's interesting. You know, so why, you know, I've known about you for a few years, probably through, you know, similar singers or musicians that we follow online or festivals and all that. But it was actually, I forgot to tell you when we talked, when we spoke on the phone, I was watching an Amazon Prime thing about Sicily and you popped up and I was like, oh, that's so strange. I know her on Instagram and Facebook. And so that was what prompted me last week to send you a message. So that was, I was watching a, I can't even remember what it was. It was a series about Sicily.
Yeah, it's Mark Spano's documentary on Sicily, Land of Love and Strife.
That's it.
And it was, Mark Spano is this wonderful Sicilian American filmmaker. He now lives in North Carolina. And he really put this labor of love together because, like so many of us, he wanted to show the Sicily that we know. He wanted to show the Sicily that he loves, that doesn't always get recognized publicly. And it took him several years to put that documentary together. And it was just a real honor for me to be part of it.
No, so that's very cool.
I was watching Amazon and I saw you. I'm like, oh, that's great.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. So, you know, it's hard. Me, I'm 100% Sicilian. I mean, we all came from, other than my dad's mom, who came from Palermo, everybody else in the family is from Aragona and actually lived like right next door to each other. And now with the ancestry going back, you know, I found back to the 1700s and probably before, right in that little, you know, area of Aragona. So to me, the Sicilian roots is very strong. Why do you think, and I always find this interesting, you know, Italians are very proud to be Italian, but when you talk to a Sicilian, I find it that they're even more proud to be Sicilian than it is just to be Italian. Why do you think we Sicilians are so proud of that little island that we come from?
Because there's so much to be proud of there, you know, and there's always that joke that like, well, no, you know, I'm not Italian, I'm Sicilian kind of thing. I just think that there is so much, and that's, even in the music, I think there's so much that makes it up. There's such a richness. There's such this, I don't like to use the word diversity because that's kind of like, it's like a hackneyed word now, but there's such a, it really is a diverse amount of components that make up Sicily. And there's a fierceness, I think, that makes somebody Sicilian. There's a tenacity. There's an endurance, if you will, or stick-to-itiveness. And I think there are things that no matter where you go in the world or no matter how many generations removed you are, there's still something that's in our soul that connects us, kind of like a brotherhood, if you would say. And again, it's I think this is particular to Sicily because, for example, in Sicily, they don't say that we're related, right? Mm-hmm. They don't say, who are you related to? They say, a quo partieni. Who do you belong to?
Right.
And it's really funny. Like one time I was there with my daughter when she was little and we're waiting at the bus to go. We were at the beach and waiting at the bus to go back to, we're going the opposite way. We were in town for the market. We were waiting to go back to the beach where we were staying. We're waiting the bus up. And I started talking to this older couple and I said, oh, well, I'm here for the summer to visit my uncles. And they said right away, they said, well, who are you related to? Al quo partieni. And I knew right away, I said, oh, well, you know, and I told them who my uncles were. And then another time here, cousins were visiting and they were my dad's cousins. They were from Sicily, but they they hadn't seen my father in like 30 years. And we were all sitting around the table trying to figure out how we were related. Were we first cousins? Were we second, once removed? And my aunt took my hand, she held my hand. She said, it doesn't matter now. She says, you belong to me. We belong. And Sicilians feel that, like, for some reason, and I don't know why that is, but it's this tradition of belonging. You belong to Sicily.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. My wife is not Italian or Sicilian, but she's Jewish, so they have a similar culture. The Jewish. Yeah, and so you know, when I have cousins, or when my cousins or people we know in Rockford that are Sicilian, they have cousins coming from Sicily, we all get together and my wife will look and just say, so who's this to you? Is it like your first cousin? And I'll just be like, I don't know. There's Sicilians from our town in Sicily. And right. You know, we're family. We're probably family. And we treat each other like family. So it's very interesting. The big parties, and it's sad. I remember, you know, I'm 30 now, but you know, when I was 8, 9, 10 years old with a lot of the Sicilian cousins coming over, and there'd be parties like for 3 days on end at the house with everybody. It's kind of sad that that's somewhat coming to an end. I don't see it as often because, you know, my aunts, uncles, grandparents are, you know, starting to pass away or getting older. And so it's sad. But how are you? You have at least one kid I know of, right? You have more than one?
My daughter's going to be 23 at the end of this month. I don't know how that happened.
So how is she with the culture? Is she going to, you know?
It's kind of like, I don't know, when I was a kid, we kind of had to push it forward, I guess, because, I don't know, it was kind of like, I don't want to say rediscovering, but maybe rediscovering a bit. Because even though we were in it, even though we still had, like you said, the tradition with the old timers and stuff, the other part of our culture was kind of being forgotten, and we had to reach back and hold on to it. But she's grown up with it. You know, I used to bring her back and forth with me to Sicily in the summers when I'd sing it in the temples. And I don't think she realizes that her upbringing was very different than other people her age, and that she's always been immersed in this culture. So she hasn't had to rediscover it, which is really cool. She's grown up immersed in it. And I even used to tell her when she was a kid, I'm like, you don't have a normal life. Like, other kids don't do this every summer. Right. Other kids don't, you know, other kids don't tag along and meet these people. And so it's a little different. I think I feel badly for her, and because she doesn't have that that experience that we had with all the cousins and all the aunts and uncles, because it doesn't exist anymore, really. And we lost a lot when we lost that older generation. In my family, my mom's really the last one out of her generation. I have other cousins down in Maryland that are still her generation, and it hurts that we're not all, you know, my father used to, like, we're not all together all the time. You know, my dad was like, any excuse to have a party. Any excuse to have people in his house. And when I say people, he's like 70 people at a time. And he'd be happy, like, sit down at the end of the party after everybody left, and he'd count, like, how many were here and who had new babies. And he's like, this is great. We had 5 more people than last time. And, six, you know, and I miss that. Yeah. And I don't want that back, because I just don't think people don't stop by anymore. I have, like, one friend that, when we're in the neighborhood, each other, we call and say, listen, I'm driving by your house. Are you home? I'm going to stop by. Nobody does that.
No, I remember growing up, there would be the stop by. They're going to stop by for coffee. And now it's like that Sebastian Maniscalco skit where he's like, if someone rings on the doorbell, everybody hides, hit the deck and hide. It's like, yeah. why in 15, why 20 years has it, why did it change in 20 years like that? Because I remember as a kid, just like, oh, someone's at the door, they're going to come in for coffee, and then they're here till 2 o'clock in the morning, because you know how it is with Italians, they don't leave. So, I mean, it's different. It is sad. But getting back to the music a little bit, so I have a lot of respect for what you're doing, because, of course, you know, I'm Sicilian. Growing up, you know, it was a little different for me, because especially with my grandfather, who I was very close to, who was the musician, he, even though he was, you know, broken English, sang in Italian, taught me all the stories, he refused to go back to Sicily, because he prayed that you know, please God, he'd go to church every day. He said, if you get me out of here, I'll never come back. And he made this promise. And so he was the one in the family that never actually went back. All my other grandparents went back. My mom visited. I went. So I really didn't have this like Sicilian true deep connection until I went for the first time. Because, you know, in your head growing up, you hear about the war and it was horrible. You're so poor, they got to get out. And it's just like, why would you even want to go back if everybody's trying to escape from there? But then you really, you know, as I got older, he started telling me these stories and I started really hearing about the folk music. So it is very interesting. I don't know. It's hard for me to say this because I don't want it to come across, you know, in a bad way. But when you talk Sicilian music, just like any folk music, sometimes for the younger generation, I feel like, especially me growing up in my 20s, it was like, all right, everybody knows Che La Luna and, you know, some of the Sicilian hits. But when you get really deep into that folk music, sometimes, I don't know if it's like an embarrassment type of thing. Like, is this like a weird, I don't know how to describe it, if that makes sense what I'm saying. Like, I wouldn't want to perform it. And like my other band members would be like, what the heck are we playing? This is not like what we know. This is not, you know, Sinatra. It's not O Sole Mio. It's not, this is not Italian music. Is this gypsy music? What is it? And so I always refrain from like really playing it. And then last year, 2 years ago, we play at a place in Rockford all the time called Francesco's Restaurant. And the family, they're actually from Aragona, Agrigento, where we're from. So we know each other from back there. And he called me one day and he said, there's this group of four guys coming from Sicily and they play folk music and Gruppo Folk or something like that. I don't even remember what their name is. And so he's like, I want you to play with them. And I don't play the Sicilian folk. And when they played, I was like, man, this is amazing stuff. And but I could tell the crowd in Rockford, Chicago area was like, what is this music? This does not sound Italian. So do you see that stigma a little bit? Has it been difficult to get around that stigma all these years of performing? And, you know, I just find it interesting. I don't know where the question's going, but I hope you understand kind of where I'm coming from.
It's something that I've lived with for a long time. And I guess, you know, I still face it somewhat, but it's not as bad as it used to be, only because not only have I gotten more common, I've gotten more well-known, I guess, or my work has gotten more well-known, but music, people have gotten more familiar with it because there are so many wonderful groups out there that make this music. And I have to say, you know, for the most part, in Italy, it's not a problem to get up and do this music somewhere. And whether I'm in the north or the south, people recognize it for the rich, beautiful tradition that it is. Here it was harder. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And one of the reasons, and you touched on this, one of the reasons is when people came here, especially Italians, up until I would say probably the 1950s or 60s, people weren't coming here just for the hell of it.
Right.
Were coming here because they had to leave behind a really brutal life, yeah. Especially ones that came over, you know, around the time of either World War. And it was hard and there wasn't a lot to go back to. People did go back and forth, but a lot more people stayed here because there wasn't really anything to go back to. So once you had things changing in Italy in the 60s, the 70s, especially the 80s, right? There was a worldwide economic boom. That's when people were starting to go back and say, oh, wow, you know, Italy's beautiful. Like, these little towns are amazing, you know. But it wasn't like that before that. It was, right. And this happened not just in Sicily, but all over southern Italy. People had to leave behind the life that was inexplicably harsh. And the music was a very strong reminder of that life. So it was kind of like, you're an American now, you're American. That was in the past.
Right.
So you had a lot of people that just said, I just want to close that door. I don't want, because it was such a reminder. And it was a reminder of a life that that you had to leave behind, even if there were things about that life that were idyllic, even if there were things about that life that you really missed, you had to leave it behind. And it was a heartache. So that was one of the reasons, too, why the music was forgotten. And another reason was that, you know, our lives change. Like, we're talking about how we don't have the, you know, the family gatherings anymore, but one of the biggest things was that we don't live that life like we used to outside, socializing outside, all this socializing. For example, barbershops in Sicily were a huge social gathering place, and they made music. The barbers all used to either play the mandolin or the guitar, because what were you going to do when you weren't cutting hair? You weren't going to just sit there like, they would pick up an instrument and play, and then it got to be like a social club. A lot of the Sicilian barbers still keep this tradition that, like, at Christmas time, they have like a big open house and they bring musicians in, and, you know, but that's where that comes from. But we don't have guys sitting around the barbershop anymore picking up a mandolin. You know, our life changed. We weren't working in the fields anymore. We weren't singing back and forth to communicate. We're in a factory now.
My grandfather, when he came over, it's interesting because my dad's side, his dad, the musician Vince, he came over in 55, and my grandmother, his wife, came over in the 40s when she was like 9 years old, and my great-grandparents actually sent her, they stayed back and sent her alone to America. It was that bad. But my mom's side came in the 70s. And there's just in those 20 years was a difference of, like, my dad's side, we're not speaking in Italian in the house, we're Americans now, but my mom's side coming in like 75, 77, it was, you know, that's the side that I got the Italian picked up, because they were still Italian. It's amazing to me, just in those 20 years, it was like, whether you drop the culture a little bit or, you know, you're still Sicilian, you're still Italian. So it's very interesting. But what really drove you to get into Sicilian folk, Italian folk music? What was the real driver?
Well, it was, the two biggest influences of my life was my dad was my biggest musical influence. He loved music. And, you know, like, people say, well, I remember my older brother brought home an album, my sister. I don't remember what the albums they used to bring home. I remember my father bringing home record albums. And he loved American country music and he loved Italian music. So I would listen with my dad. But when I was older, I remember being in Sicily with my dad trying to find folk music. And there for a while too, it was hard to find even in Italy, because now there's this resurgence of real authentic folk music. But what happened was, I took a workshop and on folk dance. And it was with the group in New York City, Giulietti di Piazza. And they asked me to audition. And I started working with them and they performed Southern Italian folk music. And it was a lot of fun, but I felt like there was something missing because they really didn't perform any kind of Sicilian music ever. And I was fascinated with Sicilian music and I started doing research and I just got to a point, I said, you know what, this has been fun, but I'm not, it's like a dead end now. You know, I need to go somewhere else. And at the time, friends of mine were putting together a show for an art installation. And they said, would you sing? So I said, yeah, sure. What do you want me to sing? And they said, well, why don't you sing, like, you know, Sicilian songs? And another friend of mine at the time was, believe it or not, she was writing, she was editing an anthology of folk music. And she started sending me all these field recordings. And she said to me, I know you like Sicilian music, so here. And she sent me like a library, and I have a lot of them here in my music room. All this Sicilian music, it was field recordings, and she did charts for me. She did all kinds of stuff, and I just started studying and learning. And my daughter was a baby at the time, and I remember my daughter would take her nap in the afternoon, and I would sit there like on my hands and knees next to the stereo, and I would just listen, trying to get like every note. Like, what are they singing? What note was that? You know, what were they doing in that field recording? And I didn't know why I was doing it. But then I was in a show with another theater company, GBL Presents or something like that. And they were doing Commedia dell'arte, and they asked me to sing as part of my role. And I didn't know what to sing, so I just started singing a folk song. It was the first thing that came to my mind. And the director recognized it right away because he was Sicilian. Where'd you learn that Sicilian song? And then they had me sing more and more and more. And then from that, the director of that show, her name was Paola Bello, and she's a Sardinian woman, and she said, I want to make a show for you. I want to do a one-woman show, and we're going to do this. She goes, pick, you know, 2 dozen songs that you love more than anything. So I picked 2 dozen songs. And then she said, okay, now narrow it down to the 12 that you really absolutely have to do. And they were all Sicilian. And P.S. my show with Paula never materialized, but I started working with musicians and getting arrangements. And next thing you know, I was booking shows and it kind of snowballed from there. And it was always one of those things, like, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know why I'm doing this, but I have to. And then, you know, you look back at what you've done, and you say, wow, you know, it's been, there's like a career in there. There's like a whole body of work. Like, how did that happen? So it was just like one step after that. And it was always like, you know, people would say, well, how did you choose it? I'm like, I didn't choose this music. This music literally tapped me on the shoulder, said, whatever your life is, stop. That's not the direction. You're coming with me. Like, I know how we, I said, like my aunt said, you belong to me. It's like this music said, you belong to me. And the weirdest thing is, for years, people would say, well, why don't you sing other kinds of music? And I would try to explain it, like, no matter when I started a project, it never materialized. So the only thing that would ever bear fruit was Sicilian folk music. And it was weird. It was almost like Sicilian folk music was saying, we're not done with you yet. We have more to do. And it's only right now with this whole lockdown stuff that actually like doors are opening into other kinds of music. And I'm feeling like somebody's pushing me in that direction now, but it's still rooted in the folk music and there's still an influence of the folk music and the folk music still connected to that. So it's a fact for me. It's like, what? Okay, where am I going today? Where's this journey going to take me today?
That's very cool. Yeah, no, I know my, I'll have to send you when my grandfather came, he came in 1955 and 57, he started his own record label and publishing company here in Rockford and started doing his own music. And his first 45 that he did was a song that he wrote in Sicilian. And it's very authentic to that, you know, period. It's called Lugar do Pazzo, the Crazy Rooster. And he did it in Sicilian and English, which...
It to me, send it.
Yeah, for back in that time period, a lot of people weren't doing the Sicilian English thing other than, you know, Lazy Mary and Che La Luna mock-ups and whatever. But, you know, he tried it a couple times. He did that song and a song called La Scupa that was never released. And then I think he kind of figured out no one's really buying into this the Sicilian thing. I got to do more Italian side. And he kind of got away from it. And that's kind of why it took me, you know, 20 years until I really discovered it. And so it is very interesting that the instruments, I mean, are very, I can't remember, it starts with an M, the flute you put in your mouth.
Maranzano.
Maranzano, yeah. That's
the harp. Jaws harp, Jews harp, in the Madonia, in the Madonia Mountains in Sicily, Nyangala Rune, because it's the sound that you're against your teeth, Nyangala Rune. In Naples, they call it scacciapensieri.
Interesting.
Yeah. And that's one of the oldest instruments on the planet. It's almost probably as old as a drum. And I think every culture, even in Japan, they have them and they're made out of bamboo and stuff. Every culture has that kind of, that little mouth percussion, which is really wild.
It is very interesting. I remember my grandfather telling me about that and thinking, I've never seen that instrument in my life. Because, I mean, I grew up in the 90s. I was like, what the heck is this thing you put in your mouth to do that? But so growing up did your parents come from Italy or your grandparents?
No, my grandparents.
Grandparents, okay.
No, I'm typical of what Italian Americans were in New Jersey in this area because, you know, my parents spoke, their first language was Sicilian. So I would hear it all the time. And my grandparents, I don't remember my grandparents speaking English. I'm sure they did, they had to, but I don't remember it. And I remember all the adults speaking Italian and or dialect. I didn't realize it was dialect. Right. I thought it was Italian, no, it was dialect. And I remember like feeling left out because my older cousins all spoke it, but they didn't teach my generation to speak it. So I had to like push myself on to learn. And my dad was a big influence in teaching me. And then my mom's mom, when I went to college, I majored in languages. I said, this is my revenge. So I know my language that I majored was Italian. And I used to spend Friday afternoons with my grandmother. My aunt made sure that nobody would come over, just me. And my grandmother would teach me Italian and she would go over my schoolwork with me. And She was teaching me all these things that she learned. She was in her 90s then. And she was teaching me poems and songs that she learned when she was a little girl in Palermo. And she would teach me history. And it was amazing, you know, that I kind of had to reach back for this and reclaim it, I guess, as you say, like, wait a minute, this is mine. Why can't I have it? You know, let me, you know. So when it was my daughter, I made sure when she was little that she spoke Italian. Her first language was Italian. And, you know, she studied it in school as well, but she was already well prepared. And, you know, I had summers with her in Italy when she was little where she would spend all summer speaking Italian. So I didn't want her to have to like be on the outside looking in. I wanted to give her something different than I had. So that's
cool. Yeah. No, it was tough for me because, I grew up with, I didn't know the dialect wasn't Italian. So even up till I was 19 years old, when I went to Italy, I was speaking dialect and, you know, fake Italian words that you come up with in this country. And I had no idea that it was not right. I didn't know. I thought, I thought bathroom was bukkazu when I went over there. I had no idea. I didn't know. So, I mean,
yeah. What's that? Your yard.
Yeah. My cousins looked at me like I was crazy and I had no idea. But, so you've played over in Italy, Sicily, and this country. Do you have one or two favorite American or Italian venues or festivals that really stick out that you've really loved performing at in the past?
Definitely Italy. Something that changed my life was when I've gone to Salinunta in Provincia di Trapani, and I've sung in the temples there. I used to sing at a festival they had in the summertime. They still do this festival, but it was much bigger. L'Evento in Memoria di Pino Veneziano, and it's a folk music festival. It's dedicated to this folk musician that came from, that lived in Salinunta, Pino Veneziano. And it was that festival and singing in those temples. I mean, I was, you know, singing in the temples in the archaeological park. And I did that for several summers. And I still go back. That's the one place I go back to in Sicily. I have to. If I touch ground in Sicily, I have to go to Salinunta. And so that will always be, for me, a favorite place, because so many of my friends in Sicily, I met there in those temples, and that's where friendships were forged and born and forged. And we go back, we all converge there again and again.
That's cool.
And here in the US, I mean, I love every place I play. It's gotta be a real disaster for me not to love it. But last year, I had been invited to to perform at the Montana Folk Festival. And it's part of the National Council of Traditional Arts, their programs, their festival. So that was really a high point for me, emotionally, artistically as well, but emotionally, because it's this festival where these kind of festivals, these folk festivals, they have them all over the country. And they are this meeting of all these folk musicians from all different kinds of genres and traditions and ethnicities, and it's nonstop performing in, you know, all the time. And the audience is not there because they're Italian. It's not like going, you know, performing an Italian festival. The audience is there because they just want to hear music. And, you know, you walk down the street and there's people from Montana, you're up in the, you know, in the, you know, big sky country, these people just come up to you and say, "Thank you so much for coming. Are you kidding? I would be here, you know, you didn't have to pay me. That's, you know, I would have been here anyway." And it was just awesome to bring this kind of music to a crowd that wouldn't normally hear this kind of music. And they loved it. They already knew you, but they didn't, you know, but that's how they welcomed you. So we felt like we belonged out there. So that was really, a favorite place. And we sang on top of a derrick on top of a zinc mine.
Oh, wow.
Which was wild. So that was really a nice thing for me. A lot of fun. And a venue that I'm really having a lot of fun with lately, the last couple of years, is my backyard. It started a couple of years ago because it was really, really hot and I don't have air conditioning in the rehearsal room. So sometimes the band can be a little delicate and they're like, God, and they're complaining. So I said, all right, let's just rehearse outside, because it's, even though it's really hot out, we're under the trees, we're in the shade, it's cool. And we're sitting there and we're rehearsing. And I looked around and I said, you know, the backyard is kind of like an amphitheater because the way the house is, it's at the foot of a mountain. So the backyard goes up. And my dad built this. My dad was a stonemason, right?
Right.
So we built this giant patio. And then there's this like level of another patio that he built. And it was kind of like, that was our stage. And I said, what if we have a show here? So we started this in the summers. We would have a show outside called Sotto le Stelle. And, you know, we'd strung Christmas lights everywhere. And people loved it. And I still get people asking, like, when are you going to have the next show in your backyard? What are you going to do? So we tried to do that as often as, you know, at least once a summer. And I think we should do it more often. But this year with the lockdowns, we started doing, which I'm not crazy about them, but at least we had that opportunity. We were doing the online concerts.
Oh, virtual. Yeah.
Yeah. So we were doing out in the garden. So we said, well, if we can't have the audience here, at least we'll be out in the garden. But in the meantime, because there was a lot of time to kill, you know, not a lot of time for work, but a lot of time to kill. My daughter and I started landscaping the garden, and my dad had left a tremendous amount of debris that he threw in the back somewhere, because a funny kind of, there's like a woods on the back of our property, all kinds of brick and stone and block, and nobody wants it. I can't get rid of it. So I said, why don't we just use it? So we started making terraces and little patios. So now we have this really wild backyard with these stone steps and all kinds of different levels. So we just had a concert out there, and it was wild because we had the musicians at different levels. So we were up and like going up into the woods, and we put the audience on the patio. So they had room to dance, and they could stay on the other, you know, they were on different levels too. So that was a lot of fun. And I said, this is a great thing. I would like to do a series here. So maybe you could come with your band and you could do a show in my backyard.
You let us know. We love that stuff. And, you know, it's, I love that stuff in the backyard, because that's how I grew up learning this music, was family in the backyard. So,
well, if you come out to the East Coast, we'll have to do something out here.
Well, do I played the East Coast. I mean, I've been out to New York and New Jersey before, but I played in Ulster County, New York, last year for their Italian festival. It was a quick, we had another show, so we flew in that night, that day, drove up, drove back down to the airport and back to Chicago. So we didn't see much, but I had never been outside of the big city. I've never been out of, you know, Manhattan before. And, you know, upstate New York's beautiful up there.
We really have a lot here, but I guess people go to New York and they stop. It's like, no, exactly. Come on out, this world.
It is. It's beautiful up there. So even though you started a little later in life and maybe didn't think that this is what you were going to be doing, what do you love now most about your career as a singer so far?
I love the connection with the audience. I love being able to give them something. I love being able to give them emotions and make them feel things. I love to elevate them with music. I love that. I love to ennoble people and elevate them. And I love when the show is over and ends on a high note, and people are just, I love to see how they leave the shows, how happy they are, how it's made them, you know, it's made them joyful. I love that. And a selfish part of this is that I love working with other musicians. I feel like it's a treat for me. I mean, it's the nature of what we do, right? It's, you know, you have to collaborate, but I love just being with other musicians and creating things with them, because even if you're just there to perform together, you know, you may give them an arrangement, or you may say, okay, the song has to sound like this, but then after you perform it, you have this whole new creation. Yeah. And it's like, what just happened? Let's do that again. You know, let's keep it like that, or let's change this. That's just so much fun to create like that with other people and to make things that wasn't there before musically. So that's a lot of fun, that exploration.
Yeah, no, I love that part of it too. And, you know, it's nice to be, you know, our drummer is not family, but my uncle, like I told you, is my bassist. And now Frank, we're figuring out our cousins. And we, so it's a big family thing. And we treat the drummer like he's family anyways. But I love that too. I love, you know, just messing around and seeing where something goes, or even taking an old song. And I love taking my grandfather's old songs. I do that. And remaking them and changing them up. And so, and some of the old Italian, we play more flamenco style Latin. We mesh the Latin and the Italian. So I love taking the old Napolitano songs or some of the Sicilian songs and, you know, speeding them up and more Latin style. So we love doing that. So,
great.
Yeah, it's fun. So before we get to the end, I love asking this question because this is about Italian Americans, and it's a serious topic because, you know, that's the reason I'm doing this show is the hope that you have for, especially you have a daughter that's young. What is your hope for Italian American entertainment or music? And do you have a good feeling that it's going to continue this, you know, Italian American culture is going to continue? Because, you know, it is a little sad that traditions are starting to die out. There's not an influx of immigration coming to this country from Italy anymore. So, you know, all in all, what's your hope for Italian American entertainment?
My hope is that it really becomes much more widely known among Italians as well as the mainstream. And because I think there's so much here. And that's another reason why, you know, when people say, well, why do you do Sicilian music? It's because there's so much and it's not been explored. And I know that when people experience it, they really love it. You know, it's not a hard sell. It's never been a hard sell once you get to the audience, but it was getting to that audience, those gatekeepers, the people that book you, the people that organize the festivals, they, mm-hmm. you know, they can only really go with what they know is going to make them money. Right. That's just a job. So they don't know what you do. They don't understand it. They never heard it. So it's hard for them to support it. But it was never about them. It was once you get to the audience is like, this is great. And we're fortunate now that we have all these ways where we can get to the audience. And it goes back to like what I said, you know, the concerts in my backyard. I started doing that because I got tired of having to like beg venues to let me play there. Right. And then have to promote the show myself, bring my own audience, do this, do that. I got to, you're giving me crappy sound, you're doing this. And then you're going to take a cut on my door. I don't think so. I can do all that in my backyard and everybody's going to have a great time. And I'm going to have a great time. So it was kind of out of necessity. So I really would love to see Italian American entertainment and all facets, not just Italian folk music, Italian American music, music made by Italian Americans. Doesn't necessarily have to be Italian music. You know, I'd like to see it just become more mainstream. I'd like to see us not be so much, you know, we're one of the biggest ethnic groups in the country. Like, why are we not so prominent? You know, why are we not more prominent than we are? And as far as what are my hopes and am I hopeful with, probably at this point in my life, I am the most optimistic I have ever been, because there are a lot of young people that didn't have the connections we had. So they're reaching back and they're trying to learn, you know, what was it? Why was my grandmother like that? Why were my great, what about those stories about my great grandparents? What did my parents tell me? So they're reaching back and they're exploring this. In Italy, the kids are already into it. They already value it. It's an amazing, amazing movement in Italy. I see that happening here. One of the blessings is this internet stuff. You know, it's connecting people in ways that it never had. I mean, there's a lot of negative about it, It's connecting us in ways we never been connected. So I am very, you know, hopeful. And we talked about a mutual friend of ours, Ron Onesti, who's a wonderful organizer and impresario. People like him who say, you know what, I want to have this kind of music at my festival because I know the audience will love it as much as I do. So he's giving us chances. And people like that, they're breaking down these barriers. You know, like it sounds crazy, like we have to break down barriers to get her. But people like him are helping us. So I'm very optimistic. You know, I see that there is a lot of enthusiasm for this. And it's growing. It may not be overnight. It may not be like, you know, flipping a switch. But I see that it is happening. And it is coming from the young college age kids and younger. And that makes me really happy.
Yeah,
so no. I am confident that it will keep going. It's not going to end. It's not going to die. It's going to keep growing.
And I agree with you that the newer generations too. My mom was born there, and you know, all my grandparents were born there, and my mom was born there. So it's a little different for me because I was heavily entrenched in it. But you know, for even some of my cousins that, you know, when you're young and you're at these parties with family, and you know, you're American, and it's like, I don't want to listen to the same old story. You know, when you're younger, it's like, I don't want anything to do with it. But then as you get older, you start missing it, and then you start realizing, oh, I should have listened a little deeper to that story, or I should. And so I think it's now our generation, even after me, you know, like my son and that, you know, the grandparents are going to start dying off. That generation, I think, is, if we keep passing the stories down, they'll be even more interested, like you're saying, of digging deeper and saying, okay, what was that? You know, my dad only remembered 10 seconds of this story. What was the rest of the story?
Right.
It'll be interesting. I'm trying to, you know, I'm teaching him all the songs. I mean, he's probably the only 4-year-old that knows some of these crazy Sicilian songs.
I think your videos on Insta is awesome. It's so beautiful.
Yeah. He likes it, and he definitely has the music bug, but I'm trying to start him young, just like I was. And, you know, and I think even though I didn't speak Italian or in the house, you know, it wasn't, you know, we spoke it kind of back and forth, and we went to part. I understood it. I struggle with speaking it. Understanding it probably almost fluently. It's the speaking I get all jumbled because I took Spanish in high school, and then they're so similar that I get all confused. But the only reason I was able to come this far with not really, when I sing it or speak it, I don't have that accent, is because at that age, like my son, I was entrenched in it, hearing it constantly. And so you get the, you know, the syllables and all that stuff. You kind of get the accents. And so that's kind of what I'm trying to do with him. So if he does want to learn it, at least he doesn't come across having this horrible accent when he tries to speak it. So
him a good foundation. That's important.
Yeah. And so one thing I forgot to ask a little earlier too was basically the, you know, most folk music is, you know, working in the fields or mines or story songs. Sicilian music, you know, the only big, you know, like C'è la luna or Vittina Crozza, it's, you know, I'm in a mountain and I see a skull, is Vittina Crozza. It's talking to a dead skeleton. What are the majority of these songs about, like the ones you're discovering?
Well, let me just step back a little bit. Like Vittina Crozza and C'è la luna were actually songs that were written. They were not
composed,
necessarily,
right.
But they were composed, but they were based on folk tradition. So that's something we have to, they were popular songs. When I say popular, like songs that were actually like written by a composer, by somebody. And C'è la luna was written by a Sicilian immigrant here in the US. And then it went back to Italy, but they were building on tradition. So they were either building on traditional melodies or they were building on the tradition of the lyrics. So what I found is that like when we go into, like I say, the field recordings of something, the songs that people would sing when the women are washing clothes at the fountain, when the men are carrying salt on their head, those kind of things, or when they're on a fishing boat, the songs, depending on the songs, like if it's a work song, the song has a rhythm that has to do with the motion of whatever the work was. And then what is it? Is it telling a story? Is it recounting a history? Or is it telling like a morality tale? Or is it just a bunch of words put together like a nursery rhyme because it fits with the melody? So you even have that. You know, I the love songs are my favorite. Love songs and the lullabies are my favorite. Love songs and lullabies. Love songs because I just think there's emotions, the passion. You know, you're the moon, you're the sun. I'm standing out here in the rain and the cold and I'm dying, but I won't move until you show your beautiful face and I see the moon touch your face. There's so much emotion in these love songs and so much that everybody can relate to. Everybody's felt that wistfulness when you fall in love.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Up all night. Oh, I miss him. I can't go to sleep. And of course, the lullabies. I think Sicilian lullabies. I always say this. I think Sicilian lullabies are among the most beautiful lullabies in all of Italian tradition. I really believe that. Not just for the melody, that but the images. You know, one of the lullabies they sing. It says, "You know, sleep now. Sleep like the waters sleep. Sleep like the wind sleeps, sleep like the sirens sleep." So those are my two favorites. So there's what the one, what we call a filo conduttore or nastro rosso, that one connecting line between all these songs is deep, raw human emotion that everybody feels. Not just because you're from Sicily, but from your humanity. Right. And I think Sicilian music, more than any other tradition, really always, it cuts right to your bone. It cuts right, where is your life force? That's where that music goes as far as emotions go. And that's what I think is the one unifying theme. Even if it's just a funny song, you know, like a funny song, it's like there's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of passion in there. So that's what I think is the one connector.
Yeah.
In that.
And now that you're talking about lullabies too, I got a flashback. Before it's too late, I got to talk to my grandmothers and my mom to write the lullaby that they used to sing. Cause I can remember the melody. I don't remember the words. It's definitely Sicilian though. And, I just remember it's.
You're gonna tell me you get it. I want to hear it.
Yeah. All I remember is it starts with do, do, do. They say do, do, do. But I don't remember the rest. I just remember the kind of the melody, but they're haunting lullabies. Yeah. And I, when my son was born, I wrote a song that actually I called it Haunted Lullaby, and we don't play it, but it's a beautiful, I don't know, I was just rocking him one day, and it's probably because of that old Sicilian stuff in my head that I wrote down this melody, and it really is kind of a scary melody, but that's kind of what I remember is like that, just kind of like a haunting feeling of that Sicilian.
I bet it's beautiful. Hey, listen, we better work together.
Yeah, I'll send you some stuff, and I'll send you my grandfather's Sicilian song too. Yeah. So before we end it though, what's next for you? Do you have any upcoming, you know, virtual things or shows or all in all, how can people find out about you and get your music and all that fun stuff?
Okay, well, you go to my website, michelamuzzolino.com, and that where I post on there whatever's coming up. You can buy my music there. Everything's available. You can purchase on download. I do have a few hard copies of CDs left, but mostly everything's download right now. Coming up next, we're going to get into the Christmas season, and that's my favorite time of year. And we have, with my band, Rosa Tatuata, we have this amazing, amazing Christmas show. We call it the Christmas Extravaganza. I don't know if we're going to be doing it live this year. We're hoping that we get a good venue and people can come out. I don't know. Everybody's, you know, everything's right. Crazy. But we will be doing at least one or two online Christmas shows. So we have to figure out right now. We have the Sundays, Sunday afternoons in December blocked off for a Christmas show. But as far as like exact time, location, that's going to come up. So please go to my website, michelamuzzolino.com. I got a little disappointed this year. I was so happy that I wrote this song. It had been a long time in coming. I was really happy. I wanted it to be released for November 2nd because I wrote a song for the holiday, November 2nd, the Festa dei Morti,
right.
The Feast of All Souls, All Saints, All Souls Days. And there was nowhere to play it. So it's getting released on a video for a project that I did, but it's not, you know, we thought we were going to be doing it in clubs and at festivals and all that kind of stuff that happened. We also thought we would have had a Christmas album out by now, but that didn't happen either. But the thing is, because I was locked away so many months without my musician, I started noodling around on the guitar and I started writing all these songs. And I, you know, as I said, the first couple songs were coming out in Sicilian. And then I started writing songs in English because I got obsessed with Felice Bryant, who was a Sicilian-American. She was married to Budlo Bryant, and they wrote all these amazing American pop songs. Mm. And I started writing songs and writing down. So I came up with a few songs, and I can't quite get a feel of what they're supposed to sound like. I'm not sure if they're country music. I'm not sure if they're blues. I'm not sure if they're like going to be swing or rockabilly. I don't know. But I have this body of songs now. I said, well, now I have an EP. I have to record these somehow. And I'm thinking, well, if I add a cover and if I add a folk song and I have a record, so my quest right now is I'm trying to find a producer that I can work with that can help me figure out what this sound is that I have now. Hmm. So again, it's all rooted in the folk music, but it's taken this other route of, have I gone country? Have I gone blues? What have I done? I don't know. Right. That's my quest now, is I'm trying to figure out like, well, who can I get to produce this that will understand that this is another step in my journey, and who will see, you know, who will help me figure out the sound that's coming out right now that I'm doing. So that's, if I could flip the camera and you see my desk and I have like a stack of like lyrics now and music, and like, what happened? I don't know.
That's how it is with me too. I started writing a song. My problem is if I can't write the song in less than 20 minutes, 30 minutes, I scrap it. I don't know why I have that bad habit, but yeah, all the songs I've ever written, it's usually within 15 minutes. And you know, when it starts taking me longer than that, I just say it must not be good enough. I just put them in a drawer somewhere and I never finish them. So that's
probably really good. I have both. Like sometimes I write a song and it's like, wow, that was like a whole song in like 10. Sometimes it's like, this isn't right, but I'm gonna come back to it. And then yeah, I keep hammering. Oh, it's perfect. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, well,
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that like we have shows coming soon. I don't know. I just ordered a drum from Sicily. So the artist is putting together, he's making the skin. It was like,
cool.
So
that's really cool.
as normal as I can, but there are new projects coming. Just got to figure out what the next step is. Right? Always figure out what's your next step.
That's right. Well, once again, thank you very much for coming on the show. I will tag all your links on here so the people watching and listening can find out more about you and listen to your music. So once again, everybody, Michaela Mussolino, we'll talk soon.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in.
Yeah, thank you. And tune in next time to the Italian American Entertainment Podcast.